what we're seeing real doesn't matter. Did it ever? Find out on Haunted MTL's High Art Camp with contributors Parzival, J.M. Brannick, and a special guest.
Welcome to High Art Camp, a podcast that is the end-all, be-all, if a movie can indeed call itself art. I am your host and highly awarded art critic, J.M. Brannick, a.k.a. Box Human. And with me is my other host and highly awarded art critic, Parzival. Wave to the people, Parz.
Hi.
We are two mega giants on top of our game, coming to you and your tiny little baby novice ears to settle once and for all. Is this art? Joining us today is also guest mega superstar art critic Voodoo Priestess with skills and interest in anthologies, literature, and feminist theory. Hello, Voodoo Priestess.
Hello. Just so you know, she's probably going to call me Evie. That's also me.
Yes, that is also her. She goes by many monikers. So what kind of aperitif or hors d'oeuvres do you have to nosh on this evening, ladies? Evie, I know that you brought les chips.
Le crisp chips.
Les fancy crisps.
And le chocolate with toffee and almonds.
Ah. Very good.
Toffee too.
Olive cheese balls.
Olive cheese balls.
That was the artsiest we could come up with.
That's pretty artsy. That's better than Le Crisps. Unless they're...
What flavor of Le Crisps? What is that?
Hawaiian kale cook luau barbecue, sweet and spicy.
Oh, the sweetness of life and yet the spiciness of the embrace of death. Correct?
Yeah, that's feminine theory, because eventually I get a glass of water and water is feminine.
Right. I have local cherry wine, which is delightfully telling me to uncork the north. So here we are. This first episode was actually chosen by Parz. It's 2015's Oz Perkins' The Black Coat's Daughter. And why did you choose this movie?
I chose this movie because I find that it can be considered an art film, but I don't think it's too far down the art film road. So I thought it would be a good start.
Good. Fair enough. All right. We're going to discuss the plot of this movie in three acts and let it be known there are spoilers in this podcast. So if you are adverse to that, this is probably not the podcast for you. Okay. So we're going to discuss the plot of this movie kind of in its three acts. The first is that we're introduced to the first girl, Catherine, correct, ladies?
Yes, you can call her Cat.
Oh, Cat. And basically, they're at a boarding school, and you think that they're going to be lesbians, but they're not. And so this is my takeaway. Anybody can jump in at any time. Nope, okay. So you think they're going to be lesbians, but they're not. And it's disappointing. So one of the girls is basically kind of like a robot. And is very aloof and has really tight braids.
I saw that. I love her braids. I wish I could do that to my own hair. I'm pretty sure she has no friends to do it, but still.
Yeah. That was confusing because it's like, who did her hair? I don't know if she could do that herself. That's interesting.
You know, that's the thing is that there was so many holes.
There was a lot of holes.
Very vague. Yes.
And that was one of them. Mr. Perkins, please contact us about this braiding incident. That's one of the holes we need to fill.
So the girls were, like, there was a couple of girls that were left at the school during winter break, where all the other girls went home. The headmaster left. It was just the girls and the two, nuns?
Yeah, and that was a weird scene when the headmaster left, too, because, like, Robot Girl was like, don't leave, and he's like, I'm going to. And she's like, don't. And he's like, I'm gonna.
I kind of thought she had like daddy issues, and she was like, the father. Father was the father.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Which takes me back to, you know, the name of the film. So it originally started with being called February, and Oz's thoughts on that were being able to sort of transport to any space and time. Like, for example, February comes around each year, and when we have a trauma in, say, February or March, you know, we have a trauma that happens then. Every time that February comes around, we're kind of transported back to that traumatic time, and that's why he went with that name. But then A24 wanted it changed, so he went with the Black Coat's Daughter, which is the lyrics from
Dumb.
The song.
Dumb.
I was actually trying to figure out, like, what if, like, the Black Coat Star, if that name actually was, like, some sort of huge symbolic representation.
Nope. Yeah, I looked that up, too, and I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
Yeah, his brother or something wrote that incantation in the beginning.
Yeah,
which
Elvis.
Was, like, probably the coolest part of the whole movie.
Yeah, it was a nice song. Never used within the whole film. She doesn't sing it. There's a point when she sings and you think, oh, she's going to sing this song. Nope.
No. Nope. Yeah, it was really kind of scattered. Like, he didn't focus on anything. He kind of touched on a bunch of different things, but never solidified any real message.
Yeah. So they get stuck, basically, in the middle of winter, February 14th, I think, right? Or something like that. I think it was
22nd.
Oh, okay.
I have wrote it down in my notes. I'm like, what's the significance of February 22nd? Nobody leaves school at February.
Yeah, no, nobody does.
February.
I don't know. For some reason, I thought it was Valentine's Day. Maybe that's why I was kind of also like, what's going on with the daddy issues and Valentine's Day? But yeah, so Blonde Robot has a prophetic dream of like car crash and doesn't seem too upset about it. But so we think it's her parents because she says mommy and daddy, which again is like one of my pet peeves.
You don't like people to call them mommy or daddy?
I don't. Not when you're 15 fucking years old. She's not three. No. No. Anyway, so we see two different, very different people. We have, because that's Kat, and then we see Rose. And Rose is the only normal person that is in this movie. She's like, but she has the worst plot of this movie, which is basically be a girl and then have a Rizzo plot, right? I mean, that's how it seemed to me. Like, so she thinks she's pregnant.
Yeah, that was another thing. It's like, she just thought it because I guess she slept with a dude, but it's like, did you have, like, morning sickness? Did you, like, miss... It was just because you missed your period. You didn't, like, take a test. You didn't do all this weird thing. And that, like, really weirded me out. Like, you're just going to assume you're pregnant.
Well, and that...
Yeah, you can...
Go ahead.
You can definitely tell it was written by a male. However, I think... Her character, yeah, was definitely the most interesting. Like, I want to know more about that character.
Yeah, because she actually seemed real. Like, when right. Robot Girl would do something weird, like, sniff her and say, you smell pretty. She was, like, creeped out by that. Rightfully so. Actually.
But she yeah. would dress her in front of the door. I would totally have done that, too.
So it's like, okay, I get it. Her boyfriend, I'm like, you could do better, I think. You could do better. He shows up playing his classic rock. It shows back there after, like, the whole, like, I think I'm pregnant, blaring his classic rock. I'm like, really?
Well, to be fair, at that point, or was that the point when she told him?
That was the point when she told him. And he was like, oh, bummer, man. What are we going to do? And she's like, you don't have to do anything. Like, and this actually happens a lot in horror movies, is this plot, the subplot. which is weird because this happens a lot where one of the people thinks that they're pregnant, and that's kind of like a thing, but it's kind of a thing that we kind of don't care about. You know?
It's just weird because I kind of got a different interpretation from the way the boyfriend did. It kind of felt like he was like, well, I'm here to help, like real awkward about it. But then she was like, I don't need your help. Like it was a one night stand thing. And now she feels awkward having to get him involved.
Holy crap. You guys hear the storm?
Okay. So Pars is going to be in the middle of a storm. Hopefully it's not a demon storm.
It's so loud in the house.
Oh, it's not super loud for us.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's not super loud for us. Well, anyway, so these two girls, they just can't get along.
No.
And they're both just waiting for their parents to come. Robot Girl starts doing weird stuff because she's just not there. I know, I think we're getting into the second part now, so Evie, help me out.
Yeah, the second part is when kind of we're more introduced to Joan, the Joan character. Which I won't spoil anything this soon in. We'll wait till the third act to spoil everything for you guys, even though I'll probably spoil it on accident. Anywho, so basically this girl, Joan, she's traveling around trying to get to Bramport, and she hitches a ride with some weird dude and a chick.
Weird dude.
Man in black.
Yeah, it's just like, you gotta admit, he's like creepy the entire, like he's portrayed creepy the entire time because he's just like, I'm here to help you. I'm such a nice person.
However.
He's like, just let me help you.
I have had interactions with that, like just like that with men of faith. Like they try to be so generous that they come off creepy.
Yeah. Still creepy.
For real, yeah. And I think that's great that they included that, whether that be by purpose or not.
Well, I'm sorry, but well, we're gonna get into spoiler but yeah, because he's a man of faith. He's like, do you believe in God? She's like, no. And he's like, well, you gotta, you know, this is what I believe. But that whole scene in a towel, she's in a towel, she is right. Naked, and he's like fully clothed, and he just sits down and is like, let's chat.
I know, that was so weird, because it's like,
yeah,
this guy is like, it's clicking in his head, it's like, you know, this random girl I picked out in the middle of a bus station, I'm locked in a room alone with her while she's naked, this is going to be fine, this is fine.
Yeah, and he's like, he wasn't like, you know, let me give you a minute, maybe we should go downstairs and eat and talk, just like, I no, I'm just going to sit right down and watch ya.
People saying that that couple was in, you know, still dealing with grief, and grief can make you do some odd things. I can just see my art people saying that.
Yeah, but it's also, it seems like an art move to do. Like, oh, these people are strange, aren't they?
So I actually think that was done with intention to it, because mm-hmm. Now I'm gonna accidentally spoil everything. Since she's trying to get repossessed by the devil,
right? Like,
well, you went right to it, Jesus, Pete.
But
I thought you were gonna say about Rose's parents, Jesus.
No, because
all right, yeah. Go right to it. All right, fine.
She's go trying then. To get repossessed. Well, what's happening is because they're men of faith, because they're God who like chased away the demon, they're supposed to come off as threatening because they're the opposite of what she wants.
But I think the man of faith is only secondary to a man of loss, because he is a first, he is grieving his daughter, and that right. makes him a man of faith.
Mm.
Not the other way around.
It's also kind of depressing. It's like, hey, I think of the hitchhiker that killed our daughter. And
and I mean that kind of plays on the theme that was the most overwhelming of loneliness and the lengths we will go I mean, that man was grieving. That man is lonely. He doesn't have his wife like he used to have. Not that I'm excusing that behavior.
Can we talk about the wife speech for a hot second?
Well, in the wife speech is a symbol that I want to address too that I don't quite understand.
Okay, go ahead.
Hair. The whole damn movie, we were shown the backs of heads. We were shown hair brushing. We were shown doing things with hair. The symbol for Bramford was a person with long hair.
I think that's a symbol of femininity, because when they were talking about the demon worshippers, they were saying that they didn't have any hair at all.
Right. So that goes back to like in the Christian faith, it would be, you know, the woman's hair being their covering.
Mm-hmm.
It brings glory to have longer hair.
Like Samson got his hair cut and nobody loved him anymore.
He was sad. He lost all his strength. He couldn't do those cool biceps.
It just wasn't clear enough. Like, I think they could have done so much more with, if they wanted to use that symbol, they should have done so much more with it instead of just kind of have it around.
I do think one of the points of the hair was, because when you're noticing a cat going, you notice Kat going crazy and she's getting more and more possessed. Her hair is the same as Joan's.
Well, her hair gets cut. Like, her hair is cut. Like, it's shorter. It is shorter than what she started with.
Yeah.
I noticed that too, because I'm like, this bitch cuts her hair, and she's like...
Which would, I guess, signify...
Getting mad.
Yeah, I guess that would signify moving away from faith and into what she feels either more drawn to, or her own nature, which isn't of faith, a life of faith, which,
you know. Well, it's being possessed.
Well, yeah, on surface, yeah, for sure.
So this is like where, like, all the religion stuff is kind of secondary to the fact that she's very lonely and she has, like, nothing to really cling to.
But is, like, she, though? We don't know anything about her.
We don't. We have to make that assumption, because it's the only that makes sense.
Nothing about her. We know nothing.
Like this. She had a dream in which her dad, probably the demon, showed her the car all smashed up. She goes and is like, my parents weren't here. Aren't you staying for my performance? And it's like, no. He's like, oh, so you're going to miss it. And she's like, okay. The next person that she has any contact with is the Rose, who is like, fuck off, I'm trying to get an abortion on one night.
Like, I can't deal with you. I got abortions to think about.
Yeah, except does that so weird. Anyway, and then I guess the next people in line are the two nun people who are just like, don't they, like, straight up tell her, or is it the other guy who's with them that's like, you can't live here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't just let you live here.
Yeah. And so it's like, she's basically getting told from all sides, we're taking care of you, but we need you to get the fuck out as soon as you can. And...
I don't blame them.
Yeah.
I don't blame them.
But at the end of it all, like, the throughout the entire time, even though he's being a dick about it, it's that, like, the demon is with her the entire time. Like,
yeah, we see in a flashback, like, all, like, parts of the previous scenes from her angle, now showing, like, this shadowy figure that doesn't really look like a demon. It looks kind of like from Donnie Darko. Like, what's his name? Frank from Donnie Darko.
Yeah, I love Frank.
And then basically at one point telling her to kill them all. So then she goes on that murderous rampage, decapitating them, killing Kat, who we find out in the Rizzo, not killing Kat, killing Rose, but we found out in the twist, Rose is not pregnant. Wow. But then she gets killed and decapitated. and then she goes to the boiler with all these heads, because that's where the demon is, the boiler.
So question about her finding out she's not pregnant. She didn't take a pregnancy test, right? It was just like she had her period.
Okay,
right?
I have deep thoughts about this one.
Yeah,
this is a huge pet peeve.
Yeah, because you don't necessarily not get your period when you're pregnant. And
yeah, but did you know that when you were 15? Trying to think if I did.
No.
Yeah, so I don't know. Would she have access to a test?
Well, I kind of feel like that's what her, like, I don't know, the boyfriend thing. Did they not take her to get a test? It was...
Right.
I don't think so. I think she was just, like...
Telling him, hey, look.
Freaking out, like...
Yeah.
You know, teen drama, like, oh, I think I'm pregnant. Oh, my God, 90210, you know. And he's like, oh, bummer, man, you know.
Can I at least drive you there?
Can I at least drive you to
Can we get an ice cream afterwards, please? Can I get sprinkles?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. It seems like, because she's on the toilet, it seems like it's a period, you know? Mm-hmm. Which is funny because it's a movie focusing on female interaction and reaction and all this stuff. And you show very vividly, like, a throat being cut, but you can't show a period wipe.
Yeah, I know. It was awkward.
I mean, just get a good little close-up on that, you know? Like, ah. Oh,
yeah, this film was definitely a good try.
This is good blood. See? Good blood.
Right.
And then she hears somebody come into the bathroom, which, again, if I hear what I think is a robot coming into the bathroom, I'm thinking, oh, she knows that I'm in here. She probably has to shit. She's going to just wait. You know, I wouldn't be like, oh, investigating. Oh, who's there? Be like, oh, she's just waiting for me to get out so she can take a dump. But that's not how that movie goes. I would have a very boring movie. I'd be like, demon, your turn.
I think this should have been like a short film or completely told differently. The nonlinear story was not a good choice.
Oh, really? I kind of enjoyed it because...
I did too.
It was all disjointed and stuff. It was like a really cohesive narrative, and watching it like go, you get little hints that show that, like, especially when you watch it a second time, hints that show that is Joan.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said before, the hair stays the same. The way she like counts her change to use a payphone, which, by the way, where are those payphones? Like, what year was this?
For real, I saw that. I'm like, what is that?
And that's something the director did. The director, you know, with the two quarters. Okay, they both went up to the phones at different points. Kat and Joan. And they each had two quarters in their hands, right? And they showed them on the camera the same way in their hands. Yeah. And that was a message to the audience. These guys are the same.
Right.
And also, like, how quiet and polite they are. Because you know how she says, like, her please, the sirs, the ma'ams, and is just, like, doesn't really say anything unnecessary.
She's a robot. Like, right.
Yeah, they're both kind of robotic, except... The Joan was a quieter robot.
Yeah, here's my conspiracy theory. I think it was an AI program / cyborg, and it infiltrates a girl's school trying to pass as human, and the phone somehow messes with the program because it picks up the phone, and that's when all this goes down. And from there, the software becomes corrupted. And there you go.
I have something that disproves that.
Yeah, what's that?
Remember when it's like going over Kat's point of view and she's talking to Rose and Rose is being a little pregnant bitch? What's happening? Remember the demon is like behind her and it has this double speak, and it kind of makes me think that like the demon is talking through Rose and making her be extra gross. Because like after that, when the demon isn't like just out and about, he's already like attached himself to what's her face, Kat, the robot.
It's hallucinations. It's hallucinations.
Oh,
I mean, like that could be
She was in the Matrix the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. I did like the, when they did go back and show kind of the scenes of where Frank the Demon was. And by the way, that was the easiest exorcism I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah, I agree.
It was like,
but, however,
devil be gone. And it's like, fine, fuck it, I'm out.
But she wanted him more than he wanted her.
Yeah, I have a theory. Oh, continue.
Part. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Go on.
My theory is that she was never actually possessed. She was just that the devil was telling her to, so they could be besties forever.
Very good.
Wait, the devil was telling her that she was possessed so they could be best friends?
But she was just listening. Like, the devil was hanging out with her and was like, hey, buddy, why don't you, like, kill those guys? Cut off their heads and stuff. I'm like, and, like, she was like, yeah, hail Satan. And but he wasn't actually controlling her.
Okay.
Right. And, and why would, you know, he's already got control over her. Why would he want to mess with her anymore? He's got other people, other fish to fry.
Well, who knows? I mean, like, we don't know if it was the devil. It could have been a devil, you know, like Pazuzu, you know.
Sure. You know, well, we could also take religion completely out of it. You know, go way art and say that the whole thing is a metaphor for coming of age.
Yeah.
Seeing that, you know, the shelter that you've had put around you is really not as strong as you thought it was.
Crap.
And, you know, being 15 and starting to see, okay, I'm not all the way like what people think I am, you know, and you become having an identity crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And then working through that, and then the horror of realization that, you know, everything you've done is for naught. What do you think, Voodoo, on that?
Like, that's so depressing. Like, when you think about it, it's just like, well, sometimes all that's going to happen in life is you're going to get your head cut off and you just kind of learn to accept it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's our episode. No, I'm just kidding.
Our 5 points, right?
Yeah. What I thought was interesting, it super falls apart for me that the parents don't recognize the killer of their daughter. Do you know how many times in court and retrials and appeals and newspaper clippings and whatnot, there is no way. Not with the dad being that obsessed with it. There is no way that he would ever not recognize her. And the mother would never not see her. You know?
Fair.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I don't even see you. Why was that said?
Like, I love that. I love that monologue. I'm going to use that as an acting monologue from now on. But with like a Cockney accent, you know? It's strange. I can't see you. Oh, governor. It's weird. Like the whole thing. It's so art for art's sake, you know?
And it's not, and it's not all.
I thought I saw her once. She was at a grocery store.
Like the atmosphere was great.
Yeah.
Absolutely great. The atmosphere. Yeah, they should have used that song a little bit more, I think. Or at least, you know, some of the melody from it, or even using that key throughout.
For the art's sake question thing, I have, like, did you, because this was like a really good scene with tension and everything, but like it made me wonder about it a lot, where they're having that dinner and the spoon. And she's like staring down at the spoon and it's crooked and she's straightening it. Like,
yeah.
That scene told me that her person is still there and she's struggling with allowing this other thing, this unknown, scary thing, kind of take over. And that's her last little kind of grip on reality. She could control that spoon. It wasn't straight.
I don't know. I think she seems pretty chill. I think she's pretty chill with like having it inside her.
Yeah.
Don't go.
That ending was just so sad. I almost cried.
Really?
It's like the worst up ever. It's just like your parents don't approve of you, man. And so you like the boyfriend goes away and you go to win him back and it's just like you moved on.
Yeah. I think I cried the first time I watched it at the end. Just that sheer loneliness, that sheer you're completely alone. There's not many feelings that stack up to that one.
I guess I'm a dick. I was like, well, what you gonna do now? You got all them heads. I thought it was one head too less, you know? Maybe three would have done it.
Well, that's where I figured she was off to next, was to go kill more people. Yeah. Okay, that wasn't enough. Let me give you more.
Right. Exactly. And trust me, I get it. Being from Michigan, I get furnace worshiping in the winter.
Cold.
Like, I get it. I don't agree with it, but I get it. All right, do you think that we thoroughly discuss the first, second, and third act? Should we?
Enough, I think. There's so much to talk about with this film.
There's a lot to talk about. Oh, there's one more thing I have in my notes that I just wanted to point out, that it does make me wonder about the history of Hail Satan, because it's like I'm assuming and thinking it comes from like Nazism and like the satanic movies of like the 70s, you know. But I wonder where
Nazis aren't Nazis like Christian or something.
Well, yeah, but
I would say it would go back way further than that.
Well, no, because they did the Hail Hitler. So where does the Hail Satan come from?
You know? I think Hail Hitler might have been after Hail Satan.
I don't think so, because if they're Christian, why would they do that? If it has Who's connotations. Christian? Nazis were.
I'm going to look this up, Hail Satan.
I just thought it was interesting. Like, good things aren't hailed, you know? I think one came before the other. I think Nazism came before the Hail Satan came. And then the Hail Satan was just used, like, in Rosemary's Baby and things like that to kind of allude again to, like, the Nazism. Again, I don't know. It'd be great.
There's a documentary about the Satanic Temple.
Yeah, there's one in Detroit.
I do know that, yeah.
Yep, I know them. But it's just interesting. I just thought that was... because in the point of the movie, before she is shot in the shoulder... by the way, good or bad shot, depending on what you think. I think it was a good shot from the sheriff because he saved her. But spoiler alert, she's still a killer. But she says, Hail Satan, after putting her arms up kind of in a crucifix and then putting them all the way up.
Yeah. So why was shooting her a good thing?
He shot her in the shoulder. That was a good shot.
Probably because he sucked.
Huh?
Probably because he sucked at aiming.
Or he was good at it. He probably saw a little waif and was like, oh, look at her. Looks like she needs some braids in her hair.
From Wikipedia says, the phrase Hail Satan is documented as early as 1808, where it is said in the poem, The Monk of Cambrai, by an evil monk who uses his pact with Satan to advance in the ranks of the Catholic Church and finally become Pope.
Sounds about right.
I wonder when it got popular, though. Like, when it was in the popular consciousness, you know?
Yeah. 1968, there was Rosemary's Baby. That might have re-brought it about.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that Nazis are good Christians. They aren't. Spoiler alert. But I'm just saying that I think it would be interesting. I don't think they would have made that choice. I could be wrong. Let's get off the topic of Nazism and go to a funner topic of discussing the five key points. We're going to discuss if it's art and determine once and for all if The Black Coat's Daughter is a work of art. No more debates. That's it. So we're going to be deciding on technical skill, on concept / creativity, aesthetics. I can speak. I can. Emotional power and cultural relevance and influence. So yeah. We're going to start first on technical skill. What do you think, Pars?
Technical skill. I thought it was fine. The language, the genre. Yeah, it was horror. Sure, should have gone a little bit further than it did, but. I mean, like, I didn't find the writing very honest. You can tell it was written by a male, and it was a little bit too showy. However, the camera work was fine. Good.
I, being a genius of everything, I know technical skills up the wazoo. Uh-huh. I actually thought the technical side was really good for the most part.
Yeah.
It was beautifully paced. It had some really interesting shots and good lighting. Technically, it's very sound, especially as a debut film. This was his debut film, and it was a passion project that he did for a few years trying to get off the ground. And so it's actually pretty amazing to see that as somebody's first film. The only issues that I did have with it are some of the choices in acting, and like you said, some of the writing. I'm not sure if like rewrites or other takes would have been better. But it just felt like sometimes it was like, oh, this is a movie scene. Let's watch the movie scene. Now the movie scene is done. So, but with technicality, I actually give it high marks. I would give it 4 out of 5 Cthulhus for technicality. What about you ladies?
I can agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to put that as your quote. Yeah.
Now, hold on. Is this from an art perspective on the technical skill, or is this from just a technical skill perspective?
This is from, we're delving in to see if this is a work of art. So
right.
Yep. So this is the technical aspect of it.
Okay.
So okay. Technically, I think skill-wise, it's very sound. The only thing, the acting, particularly the mom's monologue,
the flashbacks were good.
Yeah, but some of the acting was kind of hit or miss. What about the concept, you guys? Or the like the creativity, like the subject matter and content. What do you think about that?
Probably 4 out of 5. Knock off a star for the weirdly handled random pregnancy thing.
For concept, I would go more down to 2.
Wow.
Just on the basis that it was tried to touch on too many things. He wasn't as focused as I would have liked to have seen.
Okay.
Just one of the things I liked about it is a lot of possession films are kind of the same thing, like rinse, repeat, basically. So I give it high marks for it being just the freaking... not Exorcist, the Antichrist, except...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah, I would say the subject matter was really creative, especially refreshing to the genre. I kind of felt, though, that the content and the execution was lacking. Again, Rose seemed to be kind of like the only human in the movie. Well, the rest of the characters were kind of like, I don't know, they felt kind of like a complex AI system moving around her. Like, even the broken parents were just like...
They were pieces of the puzzle. and she was the game.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, these are... oh, that's me now. You guys hear that? I'm rumbling now. Outside, there's a storm. It was a dark and stormy night. 3 people got together to talk about a movie and if it was truly art. But yeah, it seemed like they were just kind of like PCs. with phrases that they said, you know. The twist was interesting, I hate to say, but I don't think it was really necessary. I think it made it more unbelievable.
The one that Joan was Cat? Or
yeah, the one that Joan was Cat.
Okay.
I found it more like shocking when we found out that they were her parents. Or they were, what's her, Frozen? Parents, yeah.
Yeah, see, like, I don't think that, I don't know. I think that, like, you could have, I don't know. I didn't think it was very believable. But anyway, I thought the demon yoga pose was more than just unnecessary, but it was bland. I did not care for that. I was like, oh, I have seen that on so many cover boxes.
It's almost like he was, ticking that box. Okay, right. The weird movement, body movement done.
And we have that for the cover if we need it. Okay. But all out of all, I would give it 3 out of 5 for the concept.
For the concept.
Mm-hmm. Okay, for the aesthetics, the beauty of it, the elevation of senses. What do you guys think?
I've seen a better vomit. It's
kind of bland. You're like hashtag vomit not impressed.
The atmosphere was pretty good. The colors used and all that, you know, was really good.
What do you think, Evie? I mean, whatever your name is, voodoo priestess, sorry.
Aesthetics.
I know her as Evie.
I'm trying to think because on one hand, the atmosphere and everything was really great. And on the other hand, we didn't really see much of the school. Like, I liked the boiler, what it was on and she was worshiping in front of it. Like, mm-hmm. That was like a strong scene. Her and crying in the cold when it was the boiler was all cold and stuff like that was great, but like we didn't see much of the rooms to really get too much of a sense of them,
right? Like, exactly, yeah, there's nothing that's really setting wise that's visually engaging.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have some contrast for sure.
Yeah, the only thing that I could think of was the bathroom. And that's like, you don't want that.
Yeah, so the, like, old lady, not the old lady, the two nuns, like, their house was very clean, old lady-ish, and sterile. So that kind of gave them the very stable kind of view on it. But Kat's room, like, you see her bundled up on the blankets, and one wall is just covered with drawings of, like, people, I guess. Like, you know, like human figure poses, like if you're learning to draw or whatever. And I
didn't
can't
notice
remember
that.
As if you're an AI learning human bodies and what it means to be human. No, I didn't realize that either.
Good eye.
Yeah, good eye, voodoo priestess. What was your rating for that, do you think?
Maybe about a 2.5.
Okay.
Yeah, I say 3.
I also kind of, I felt that in the same vein. Like, there was really no color. It was really snowy and bland, which is fine. But, like, even inside, like you guys said, there's nothing that was visually engaging except for, like, the blood and the fire.
Mm-hmm.
But aesthetically, it's those, like, the drowned out kind of blandness has kind of been done to death recently. It kind of made me miss like Argento and Joe Dante and like colors in your face, you know. But
now, First Reformed uses the blandness to its advantage, mm-hmm. but I can't say the same for this one, no.
Well, and then there was nothing really used in the iconography of the religion either.
Mm.
There really wasn't any like close-ups of, you know, Jesus or the blood of Jesus, you know, to be a comparison to the blood of the people that were sacrificed or something like that, you know?
I see.
Like, there was nothing that, because you have this setting, you know, but it wasn't really used much.
Mm.
And the beauty itself came from the two protagonists and how they were shot. Everything else was just kind of background noise.
There was one shot I thought was my favorite was definitely, it's in the beginning where all the kids, all girls are walking one way, leaving the school, but she's walking through them and we're shot way up in the sky. That was definitely mm-hmm. probably my favorite shot right there. We see her just walking through the crowd of people. She's alone in this crowd of people.
Mm-hmm. And that was a good shot. And that tells us something about the character.
Yes.
It just didn't tell me enough. I give it 3 out of 5.
Yeah. Okay. Next is...
All right. Emotional power as it connects to the self. Mm. Art is the experience. So this is more about how it makes us feel. Anybody want to start off?
Well, from an art film loving perspective, I guess I would say that I did not have the kind of full movie experience like I've had with other filmmakers. However, at the end, I think that that emotional significance of being able to relate with our killer main character was strong for me. Lupercius, what do you think?
So I really kind of, like, again, the final moment, I, like, really almost cried during it, and I still love seeing it. And for someone who's, like, from the Christian perspective, I guess, hearing a guy kind of talk about the way he sees God, it kind of gave me this weird sense of, like, sometimes it doesn't work out for other people, and that's why you have severed heads in front of a furnace. She was just like, she believed in the devil and Frank rather instead of God, you know? And I don't know, it just kind of made me think of the perspective of just people dealing with their own stuff and making everyone else, including themselves, feel lonely, like isolating themselves. Because again, Rose being a full-fledged character, you can see the way, like, she's talking to her boyfriend, but she's not letting him help her go to the imaginary abortion clinic or whatever they're planning to do.
Yeah.
And the people going are helping random strangers, trying to put more goodness in the world to, or the one guy to make up for the daughter being dead, and the wife is just like collapsing from it because she can't follow him through any of this. Like, that's not where she can't do that to get her peace. And it's like, he can't understand that, and he's not giving her what she needs to move. And I don't know, it's just probably 5 out of 5. I just really like the way we isolate ourselves and others on accident, and just like everyone comes away unhappy.
Cool. I'm glad that you, I'm really glad that you have that, had that experience with that film. I'm really happy. That makes me happy.
I'm glad that you come at it from a different perspective too, to see something different, especially talking about isolation. I know it's a timely topic, but yeah, to even be surrounded by people and yet be isolated, lonely but not alone, you know.
Hashtag quarantine.
I think that's a human thing too. It's not just a female thing. Yeah. I think, you know, different genders can have influence, I think, on that. However, I think loneliness is something that just humans deal with.
I don't know. We don't know Frank. He could have been sad and lonely and just wanted some braided. Maybe he gave her the braids. No. Okay.
Okay. Evie gave it 5 out of 5 for.
Yeah.
What do you think?
It left me feeling unengaged, somewhat listless, somewhat annoyed. I didn't like how people didn't act how people act in real life. And I understand that everything is a process, and sometimes characters are not representative of how people are supposed to act, but rather an idea. But to me, it just seemed like Rose was kind of the only character that was engaging and had any kind of arc, because we don't know anything about the other characters or their motivations. Kat, who is supposed to be kind of like one of our mains, if not the main, is kind of a blank slate. Kind of as much as Victoria was in Cats, just kind of watching things happen with wide eyes until just doing things. We didn't really, or at least I didn't understand her motivations or wants really besides a daddy figure. And that was kind of a guesstimation on the little, very like little activity and interaction that we had with her. So for me, nah, it kind of fell flat. I'd give it 2 out of 5.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes I think it can be an advantage for a director, for a writer, to not give all the details.
Yeah.
You know, give speculation to your audience, but with purpose, with intent.
Of course.
And although I do think that this film calls for an audience,
And again, that's how we interpret things too, you know. As Voodoo Priestess saw, you know, the isolation and things, I saw just characters doing character things.
Yeah.
It just didn't speak to me on a different level, which is what it is. Let's talk about the cultural relevance and influence that it might have or has had. It's the last one. Anybody want to go?
I feel so bad for saying this. Probably like 1 out of 5. Like, it helped Oz's career after the pretty thing that lives in the house.
Oh, God. Why did you say that?
Well, didn't he do Hansel and Gretel recently?
Yeah, see, it helped his career.
I haven't seen that one.
Ugh. I saw reviews on that and I was like, I think I'll just skip that one. I do not like the pretty dumb thing that lives in the dumb. Sorry. It's pretentious. That is pretentious bullshit art. This was actually fine. This was good compared to that. And anyway, what were you saying?
Well, it's just that, so, like, reality speak. What kind of reach is this going to really have? Because even though it's a really cool film, it's not like it got any sort of, it didn't have any big names attached to it. Like I said, it held Oz's career, but it's not big enough for a lot of people to just know it in the mainstream. Like, this is more horror fans will watch it and they'll point it out. But if it's not really a mainstream kind of thing, then nobody's really going to take much out of that except, oh, hey, look, a dude made this. He also made I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House. He also made this. So that was an okay movie. Like, I was expecting, it had a rocky beginning and the ending is kind of meh, but it was a decent movie. It was really good in some spots.
What about you, Lady Pars?
The theme of loneliness, I guess, can be culturally significant. Mm-hmm. Currently, I think if more people were to watch this, well, maybe not though, because this is a loneliness that's grown over years and years and years. So maybe not. As far as culturally significance goes, I mean, I would encourage people to watch this movie, but I wouldn't say it's for any pressing reasons. What do you think?
I think it's a hit it and quit it movie. I don't think it brings a lot of new ideas or will be a super heavy influence. I think it's good for a watch or two, but there's nothing in it that I think really speaks to anything. Like, you can't fully say it's a feminist film because, while being female-centered, it pulls back and plays it very safe, and there's still a lot of tropes to it. You can't really say it's a strongly religious or anti-religious film because it was either very, very subtle or it just didn't play a huge part in the larger plot. So I can't really say that it was super memorable for me. Like, there was nothing very quotable or iconic that was like, oh, that was the scene in The Black Coat's Daughter, the way that other films and even indie films, you can say, do that. Like the creature from It Follows, people are like, whoa, okay, you know, you say that and they understand. But I don't think Frank is iconic enough.
Especially if we're calling him Frank.
Yeah, especially if we're calling him Frank. And again, I hate the name because it means nothing. You know, it's nothing to the story. It's nothing to the characters. And I think,
but even if it was called February, it wouldn't have made,
it wouldn't have made complete sense. I think there could have been a middle ground. Because I like the idea of what he was saying, that there can be, that a time can also be a location, you know, that you can revisit. Mm-hmm. Like that time of year, you can go back to it like it were a location. I like that idea. I don't know what that title would be, but I've only thought about it for like 2 minutes now, you know? But what was that?
February's Daughter. Just that's your middle ground.
Yeah.
That would have been fine.
That's fine. There you go. February's daughter. I like it.
Yeah.
And again, that makes it more to the characters and to the story. And then it connects it to Joan then too, or else she's just kind of floating around in the ether. So to me, I don't think it's very much. I think there might be some ideas that get spawned out of this, like when it comes to females and possession, because it is something that is different, and that could come, there could be something that comes out of that or from that. So I'll give it a 2 out of 5.
For cultural relevance?
For cultural relevance, yeah. 2 out of 5. All right. So that's kind of it. Now we're going to go to our bottom line, kind of like our snippet pieces of like what we think about the movie. I'm going to say that it's vaguely art, but it's right in the middle. I would call it a robot demon worshipping waif in pajama pants kills people after getting a haircut is my bottom line.
There you go.
What about you guys?
I guess my bottom line would be it's good for a couple watches. It's not something that you're going to like stick to immediately, because because I watched it again today in lieu of this, and it was about my third time watching it, and it's just nice kind of going back and noticing the little things, but there isn't really a lot to absorb like we were talking about before, because scenes aren't stylized, aren't like the sets aren't very pretty, and there's not much communication, and you don't get to know the characters too well. So like basically the whole art purpose behind it is just the empty and the lonely. So I think it's good for rewatches, but not so much for like everyday viewing.
But is it art?
Art.
One out of five. One, it's way not. Five, yes.
I guess I gotta kind of middle road it, like 3 out of 5, just because like the concept itself is very much artistic mindset heavy to kind of figure it out, but like everything else is just like I'm a film.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Right. All right. What about you, Pars?
Yeah, so I would say overall, I find it a good brain exercise and watch for anyone looking for that, looking for an atmospheric, gut-dropping film. You know, it can help raise thoughts that you can kind of toss around for a couple of days, but not much longer than that. So yeah, I mean, if you're looking for something like that, I would strongly encourage you to check it out. As far as if it's art or not, I would have to agree with Voodoo Priestess and say that although the concept is really trying to be, you know, it's more of an art concept. However, the rest of it, the actual film, the actual pictures, the images that were sent are more just I'm making a movie kind of thing. So
what is your bottom line? 1 out of 5?
3 out of 5.
So we all agree 3 out of 5. It's art, but right on that line. But if you do like this film, Pars does have some suggestions of other movies that you can check out that are very similar or that you just might enjoy.
Yeah, so I would, you know, as far as upping your game after watching this, I would say to check out, it's on Netflix. It's called The Eyes of My Mother, and that kind of gives a more in-depth exploration of isolation and loneliness. You know, and the waves that isolation and loneliness make following, you know, a trauma at a young age. I would encourage you to check out The Butcher's Hook by Janet Ellis. It's about a young girl's thirst for violence. Of course, Carrie by Stephen King would be good to check out. And then as far as art goes, looking for something along these lines for an art film, I would strongly suggest the film The House That Jack Built as well. It's a Lars von Trier film.
That's not surprising. Not surprising. Do you have any recommendations?
So I would recommend Hansel and Gretel if you watch this film and you end up liking it, just because Perkins does have a good way. I will say that because people argue that it's not necessarily a feminist movie, and it kind of is. The main character is a woman, a girl, lady, person coming into her own, and it kind of just ends up carrying that message anyway, because witches and all that in general in media, it's going to be there anyway, okay? So you just got to suck it up, and yeah, it's kind of a feminist film.
You won't believe just shut up. There's tampons.
No, there isn't, actually. Now that you mention it, I'm not sure if she has her period or not. She probably
does. Oh, my
God.
Is she pregnant in it? Does she think she's pregnant?
No.
Is there a car scene where she's with her boyfriend?
No. But there's a weird scene where she lays down in some random person's house, and there's a random person in there who tries to kill her. So that's kind of the same thing, I guess.
Well, at least they don't try to rape her.
They don't. They go after Hansel.
Oh, okay. That's a twist, I guess. Do you have any other recommendations?
Probably like Midsummer.
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me either.
But for like a good atmosphere and stuff, that's like the place to go.
Yeah. Tense movie, yeah.
And it's a breakup film. So like nobody's pregnant in it, but it is a breakup.
Is there a tampon in that one?
Yeah, actually.
There needs to be like a checklist, like wine, check, tampon, check, talking about boys, check.
You gotta have acid though. That's one thing Miss Summer had too. Gotta have acid.
That's a good thing to mention. We are writers at this little place called Haunted MTL. We are contributors there. We write, we do fun things. Pars does a lot of lists and fun things like that. Voodoo Priestess does, she just did a great piece on controversial films. So you should come and check us out because we also write. We're funny and thoughtful. Sometimes. Okay, so my recommendation, if you're into, if you want to see something kind of artsy that a lot of people apparently hate but I like, is Hold the Dark, which is it's a slow burn. So get used to that. It is in Alaska, so get used to snow and cold. And it is about wolves and possibly werewolves, aka skinwalkers. So check out that. It starts out slow. There's like a couple moments where you will go, what the fuck? But they're enjoyable. I enjoyed it thoroughly. But anyway, so those are our recommendations.
I'm watching that tonight.
Huh? Oh, yeah?
I'm watching that tonight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I loved that film. I really did. The effects were great. The acting was good. Kind of weird, but, you know, good. Good weird. I will now unveil my pick for next episode's movie so we can decide whether that is art or not. I am going to be choosing a classic film from an Italian director, Umberto Lenzi. You got scared, didn't you? Within his lifetime, his inspirations revolved around popular culture and exploitation genres of Italy, such as the spy genre, giallo, and cannibal films. He's been referred to as one of the undisputed leading figures in Italian cinema, but we're not going to watch any of that. We're going to be watching 1988's Ghost House, famously riffed by, well, kind of everybody at this point. So come and join us next time on High Art Camp to discuss the artistic merits of Umberto Lenzi's Ghost House. Yeah. Oh, do you want to plug anything?
Well, eventually, I guess. Later on, I plan to write better articles about voodoo and all that. But probably my next article is going to be The Call of Cthulhu, H.P. Lovecraft for Beginners.
Oh, that's cool. You should talk to John. He's really into H.P. Lovecraft.
I know. I noticed on the last Dagon review thing I did, he was like, before it, he was like, commented on my thing, and I was like, aw.
Yeah, he's big into H.P. Lovecraft. Anything with you, Bars? Anything you want to plug?
Well, I do know that I'm pretty sure on my top 15 scariest psychological horror movies, I've got this film, The Black Coat Sire, that we discussed, is on that list. Mm-hmm. I'd head over there and check out. I got coming up next, I got a Lars von Trier breakdown. I've got some real horror movies based off of real happenings coming up too.
Ooh, so. Spooky. All right, so go on to Haunted MTL. Check us out and join us for the next podcast. Thank you.